Your ultimate guide to ultra-processed food. How bad is it really? Highly processed foods, from pizza to bread, are said to be seriously bad for your health. Here is a digestible guide to what the evidence says to help you make sense of the conflicting claims. Humans have been processing food since time began to make it more tasty, more digestible, more resistant to decay and more convenient. Salting, drying, fermenting, pickling and smoking were invented to preserve foods. Milling produced flour to break bread. They also cooked unpromising or toxic raw ingredients into tasty, safe and nutritious meals. During the Industrial Revolution, however, mechanisation entered the food system. In 1802, the first sugar beet refinery opened in what is now Poland. 10 years later came the first canning factory in London, sadly not in Canning Town. In 1864, Louis Pasteur invented his eponymous processing technology, in which food are treated with mild heat to eliminate pathogens and extend shelf life. In 1869, margarine was invented. Processed food was on the shelf, and its share of the market has been growing ever since. Around 1850, purchases of processed food in the West overtook those of whole foods. The term ultra-processed food, UPFs, appeared in the scientific literature in the late 2000s, and subsequent studies have linked it to various health conditions. But was there an obvious problem? What exactly are ultra-processed foods? The science of these foods took hold in 2009, when Carlos Monteiro at the University of São Paulo in Brazil and his colleague introduced a new classification system called NOVA. This was in response to the growing interest in processed food and the absence of a clear definition of what they were. NOVA, which is Portuguese for new, divides food into four groups: unprocessed and minimally processed, processed culinary ingredients such as fat, sugar and salt, processed foods which are created by adding group 2 ingredients to group 1 foods and or using preservation methods, and finally UPFs making up group 4. Monteiro defined the last of these as created by the fractioning of whole foods into their constituents, such as sugars, fats and fibres, before these substances are chemically modified and industrially assembled into products, frequently with additives. It looks like a recipe for chronic disease, he said, and increasingly the science suggests he is right. Foods in this category include breakfast cereals, instant soups, ready-made pizzas and pasta, biscuits, fish fingers or fish sticks, reconstituted meat products, ice cream, cakes, packaged breads, carbonated drinks and many more. Basically, a lot of what is in my cupboard. The system broke new and controversial ground in nutrition science by ignoring the nutrients completely and focusing on the degree of processing. The rationale for this, says Monteiro, was because the extent and purpose of processing foods is now more useful than the nutrient content in assessing their impact on health. The UPF's industry's goal, says Monteiro, is to maximise profits by cajoling customers to abandon freshly prepared food. They have affordable prices because of low-cost ingredients. They are convenient, they have long durations, They are engineered to have craving-like palatability, and they are aggressively marketed, he says. In the United States, Canada, and UK, UPFs have long provided about half of all calories consumed, though their rise seems to have plateaued in the past decade. Consumption is still increasing in many other high-income countries, as well as middle and low-income ones. Montero says that there are easy ways to tell if a product is ultra-processed. It contains at least one food substance rarely used in home cooking, such as high fructose corn syrup, chemically modified oils, or hydrolyzed proteins, or additives such as flavoring, colorings, glazing agents, or thickeners. Why are ultra-processed foods bad for you? Nova was quickly adopted by researchers, and numerous papers came out on the correlation between Category 4 foods and ill health. But the big breakthrough came in 2019 when Kevin Hall at the US National Institutes of Health and his colleagues ran a randomized controlled trial, the gold standard of evidence gathering, to clarify the link between UPFs and obesity. They recruited 10 men and 10 women with a body mass index of around 27, just slightly over what is deemed healthy, and housed them at the clinical center in Bethesda, Maryland, for 28 days. For 2 weeks, the volunteers were fed a diet high in either ultra-processed foods or unprocessed food. In the following 2 weeks, they received the opposite diet. The regimens were equal in terms of overall calorie content, energy density, protein, carbohydrates, fat, fiber, sugars and sodium, but differed widely in the amount of calories from UPFs. The unprocessed diet delivered 88% of its calories via unprocessed foods, mainly whole fruits and vegetables, and some meat, fish, eggs and yogurt. The UPF diet delivered 81% of its calories in UPF form, such as burgers, fries, canned ravioli and hot dogs. The volunteers were given 3 meals a day, plus unlimited access to diet-appropriate snacks, and crucially, were told they could eat as much or as little as they wanted. The results were striking. On the UPF diet, volunteers ate around 500 more calories a day than on the unprocessed diet, and after 2 weeks, had gained 0.9 kilograms on average. On the unprocessed diet, they lost 0.9 kilograms, regardless of whether they were given it in the first 2 weeks or on the second. The weight changes were exactly in line with the difference in calorie consumption, says Hall. There's no magic here. The changes in body weight are directly related to the changes in calorific value. The conclusion is obvious. UPFs lead people to overeat calories, he said. When they dug deeper, the researchers discovered that when people were on the UPF diet, they generally ate bigger meals and consumed more fat and carbohydrates. Since the work, which remains the only published randomized controlled trial on UPFs, dozens of other studies have found associations between high UPF consumption and ill health, not just obesity, but also cardiovascular disease, asthma, cancer, depression, inflammatory bowel disease, fatty liver disease, kidney disease, type 2 diabetes, and all-cause mortality. For the latter, one study found that the highest consumers of UPF were 1.62 times more likely to die during the study, which followed almost 20,000 people between 1994 and 2014, than the lower consumers. According to Montero, more than 70 high quality studies have now been published showing a relationship between consumption of UPFs and 20 illnesses. That may sound like clinching evidence, but there is plenty of wiggle room. Except for Hall's randomized controlled trial, all the data comes from observational studies, where subjects are monitored in their normal life. These produced a lower standard of evidence than a randomized controlled trial and aren't considered definitive proof of cause and effect. Confounding factors can bias the results. This uncertainty has led some critics to downplay the link between UPFs and ill health. One recent review concluded that to date there is insufficient documentation of a causal role played in obesity by processing, and criticised Hall's random controlled trial as limited, in part because the 20 subjects didn't find the UPF diet more palatable than the unprocessed one. The lead author of the review disclosed that he is a member of the Scientific Advisory Board of Mars Food and the Grain Foods Foundation, although funding was received for the study. Montero dismisses these critics, but he accepts that the causal mechanisms remain unclear, beyond the obvious one of UPFs delivering poorer nutrition via high calorie and salt loads and reduced fiber, vitamins, plant chemicals and micronutrients. I suspect there's more than one mechanism linking UPFs to different diseases. In 2022, a team led by Bernard Stauer at the University of Paris proposed several mechanisms that could contribute to the unhealthiness of a high UPF diet. One is that extreme processing makes the food softer and easier to consume, digest and absorb, and hence promotes overeating. Indeed, Hall found in the randomized controlled trial that when people were on the UPF diet, they ate faster at a rate of 50 calories a minute versus 30 on the unprocessed diet. This is perhaps the most pressing question surrounding UPFs. Is the processing itself partly responsible for their health effects? Montero thinks so, and others agree. Last April, doctor and academic Chris Van Tulleken, who is author of Ultra-Processed People, "Why do we eat all that stuff that isn't food? And why can't we stop?" told New Scientist. "When you separate whole foods into their molecular components and chemically modify them, they seem to interact with the body in a very different way. But others aren't swallowing it. We think it's unclear, due to the limitations in the available evidence, whether the associations are due to the nutritional characteristics of the food or whether there's any independent effect of the processing," says Ian Young at Queen's University Belfast, UK, speaking in his capacity as chair of the UK Scientific Advisory Committee on Nutrition. "We believe it's mostly due to the nutritive and sensory properties of those foods, not a specific characteristic of their degree of processing," says Kieran Ford at Wageningen University in the Netherlands, who was involved in Hall's randomized controlled trial and is working with him on another to probe further. Another of Stuart's proposed mechanism is that UPFs could be contaminated with toxins leached from the packaging or created during processing and heating, such as acrolein, acrylamide, trans fats and advanced glycation end products. These are currently a major focus of dietary epidemiology, according to Edith Feskens, also at Wageningen University. Additives could be a culprit too. There are more than 300 in use in the European Union, and most aren't under suspicion. But there is some evidence linking emulsifiers, which enable oily and watery liquids to mix, to inflammatory bowel disease and cardiovascular disease. But Feskens is sceptical. It's difficult to imagine how a small amount of emulsifier can have such an impact, she says. Ultra-processed food and your microbiome. Ultra-processed food may also disrupt the microbiome. Human gut contains trillions of microbes that play a crucial role in digestion, metabolism, and immunity. Studies in mice and humans have shown that compounds present in UPFs can alter the biome in ways that promote inflammation. One stinging criticism of the whole debate over UPFs is that this is just old science with a new label, that NOVA is simply a new way to categorize foods that are high in salt, sugar, fat and refined carbohydrates, which are already known to be unhealthy in large quantities. Is this really anything new? Asks Hall. Another criticism of NOVA Category 4 is that it captures foods that are actually pretty healthy. A supermarket whole meal loaf is classified as ultra-processed because it contains additives, according to Feskens. An equivalent loaf from an artisan baker would feature in Category 3, despite it being nutritionally almost indistinguishable, she says. In fact, it may be nutritionally inferior because supermarket bread is often fortified with nutrients. Around 55% of Dutch fibre consumption comes from UPFs, largely bread, she says. So in that respect, the NOVA Category 4 is unhelpful. Not all UPFs are equally unhealthy, says Feskens. According to Stower, of more than 220,000 Group 4 products available in France, 21% had a good nutritional score, according to the country's guidelines. Some researchers, including Feskens, think NOVA's Category 4 could be split in two to differentiate between good and bad UPFs. NOVA is also subjective, with experts sometimes disagreeing widely on the category foods should be in. A recent study asked more than 300 nutrition professionals to categorize 231 different foods. There was unanimous agreement on only four. This calls into question NOVA's usefulness as a tool to make dietary recommendations or policy, says Ford. Nonetheless, Montero stands by his classification and says that there is now enough evidence to take public health action. His strategy is based on efforts in tobacco control, provide reliable information in dietary guidelines, restrict or prohibit advertising, put warnings on packaging, ban sales in school, and tax the products heavily while subsidizing unprocessed and minimally processed foods. Indeed, his native Brazil has been advising people to avoid UPFs since 2014. That, however, may be counterproductive. Demonizing category 4 foods or restricting access to them will deprive a lot of people of nutritious, cheap and convenient foods. It may also make the industry less inclined to develop better processing techniques to enhance the nutritional quality of foods, says Pete Wild at the Quadrum Institute in Norwich. There is a real risk of demonizing foods that are otherwise nutritionally adequate or even beneficial, says Ford. How much ultra-processed food should you eat? So where does that leave us? Most people would benefit from a reduction in their intake of UPFs based purely on their nutritional content, says Young. But how much is too much? That's a big question, says Montero. We've been looking for this threshold. The data says that the mechanisms are dose dependent. 5 to 10% of calories from UPFs won't have a big effect on health, but at 20 to 30, the problems start to appear. Ultimately, for consumers with busy lives and finite food budgets, UPFs are hard to avoid altogether and rather handy to have. My store cupboards tell a story. I try to cook from scratch, but often don't or can't. I confronted the freezer and found a ready-made pizza, but I'll definitely eat it with a salad.